Welcome back on this November 21st. Tomorrow, November 22nd, I think most of you listening will know what that date means. And we will just hold a moment's silence tomorrow, hopefully, all of us, and reflect back on what might have been. We are going to spend the next 2 hours with an American patriot who has allowed all of us to learn a great deal about the inner workings of the NSA, the No Such Agency, supposedly, or at one time, was the most secretive of all government agencies, so they say. But now we're finding out, through Karen Stewart's testimony on this program, a story that makes it quite clear that most of the people in the NSA are just people. They have problems, jealousies, rivalries, bitterness. They're mean. Some are very nice. It's an agency that has its own political infighting, backstabbing. It is cutthroat. It's people. And somehow, some way, most of us have an idea when you say CIA, NSA, DIA, that these are special people. No, they're not. They're just people, prone to the same low-life, low-brow, low-class behaviors, and worse, as we have been hearing from Karen Stewart, who has been the victim. She simply tried to stand up for what was right in the NSA. She has 28 years under her belt with them, and she has paid a terrible price. We're going to hear about much more of that tonight as we move toward maybe wrapping this horror story up as much as we're going to in the three sessions we've had. This will be a two-hour session tonight, and hopefully we can get a lot more on the table to give you an idea of what really is going on with the NSA. Welcome back, Karen. Hi, how are you?
Thank you, Jeff. Thank you for having me back.
You bet. Okay, let's just jump right back into it. And I think if all of you listening out there can, go listen to parts one and two. This is part three. We've moved into the gang stalking, retaliation, retribution that was ordered against Karen Stewart and her husband, for that matter, by the NSA for her efforts to stand up for what was done to her, which was unjust, unfair, and not at all correct. We talked about some of the techniques that these NSA punks have been using on you. And then we have the National Citizen Militia, which makes money by enforcing gang stalking requests of the NSA and other agencies as well, thinking that they're, in some cases, I'm sure, doing the right thing. But when it comes right down to it, many of the things that they're asked to do that they're paid for are not morally justifiable, in my book, under any circumstance. So tell us what you think about that and some of the other things. And we got to the point where you thought you were just maybe transitioning over into this infra-guard, as you called it, the citizen militia that does work for gang stalking operations. We're just about to transition over into that. So bring us up to date and where we were and where we're going.
All right, the last time we spoke, I believe that I was telling you that after I was put on red badge duty, which was basically my clearance was yanked, and I was put to work in a travel office that took care of NSA personnel travel, and they actually put me in a place where I'd be parking right next to the security parking lot, and lo and behold, after 2.5 years of being stalked and harassed by mostly men who looked like they were in their late 20s, I started seeing my stalkers from the last 2.5 years reporting to work at NSA security.
How bizarre. Coming to work, going home, they're the same punks and thugs that had made your life miserable. How weird.
Exactly. Now, this location was a few miles away from NSA headquarters.
Right.
But I am really astonished that they were so stupid as to put me there, that I saw my stalkers, but they did. So I started taking notes of the stalkers' cars and and the makes of the car and their tags.
Uh-huh.
And in some cases, I believe I told you, I draw for a hobby, and so in some cases I drew some of them.
Right.
And I took it to the police, and the police basically reported me back to NSA. NSA immediately came to me, told me that they had decided that I was crazy and dangerous and should not be able to be on NSA property at all, so they were putting me on admin leave. So that was about March 13th of 2009.
Wow. Wow.
So, yeah, they didn't want me gathering evidence.
Got it. Were you thinking at any time of using a camera and sitting and waiting and sort of concealment, taking some photographs of these punks?
Well, I got somebody pretty high up doing that, but I'll let you know that you cannot take a phone that has a camera capacity onto the property of NSA.
Oh, all right.
You cannot have it in your car on the property of NSA. So my having a camera at that point in time was not even legal for me to have it in the car parked at NSA, so I could not bring a camera.
You mean it's one of those laws that kind of like forbids people to put a private email server in their bathroom at home? I get it.
A little bit.
Yeah. All right.
So
now, is there anything else you want to mention about the techniques that these NSA punks, and that's what they are, were using on you that we didn't talk about? We did mention some of the things and some of the other tricks that they do.
Well, I would say NSA Security basically puts up signs around Fort Meade, Maryland, asking people to sell them their junker cars. Of course, they don't tell people it's NSA, but they ask for junker cars because they fix up and use junker cars to stalk and harass people.
Uh-huh.
And they do switch the license plates. You know, if you had a blue Chevy, then they're going to take that license plate and put it on a red Honda.
Got it.
So that. Yeah, so that's one of their tricks, and that's why I was kind of excited to see some of these scumbags parking their own cars so I could get the correct car and a correct tag number and identify the person.
That's really funny. That is stupid. That's that's one of those human errors. That's just dumb. People make dumb errors, putting you in that position where you can see them. How weird.
Well, I guess they assumed stupidity on my part that wasn't there.
No, they made a mistake there. I mean, the work you did for them for so many years, they should have had a 5-star imprint on your file. You know, obviously you did superior work. You're extremely intelligent. That's just stupid. Well, anyway.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
What can I say? They're basically Neanderthals, and they were not hired for intelligence. They were hired for a one-dimensional view and for thuggery, you know?
Yeah, brutality. This is really ugly stuff. Okay, so take us along. Now, we're going to move from the physical gang stalking, driving along, following her, tracking her with one car at an off-ramp, and then it'll go one distance, and another car at the next off-ramp will take over. Just harassing her, entering the home, doing things in the home. This is all in the earlier visits we've had with Karen. We're going to move on now pretty soon to the electronic stalking aspect of it. So take us to that direction whenever you're ready. That's going to be, I think, amazing to a lot of people.
Okay, I would say I'm going to have to finish up phase one. Phase one of
Please.
The stalking had to do with employment, and in March of 2009, they basically had me put on admin leave, and I thought, well, it's going to be hard for them, for NSA Security to stalk and harass me at home. But then I noticed a change over the neighborhood in the next 7 to 10 days, and then I noticed all of a sudden that there was a lot of foot traffic around the house. The street was 10 times busier than it ever had been. In fact, my husband at one point in time remarked, he said, where are all these people coming from? And what they had done was they went to the Fusion Center and apparently reported me as some kind of threat to the neighborhood, and then went out into the neighborhood and got, let's say, neighborhood watch or whatever it was that they had here in this area, in the Columbia, Maryland area, whatever type of militia it was at that point in 2009, and had those people instructed them on how to stalk and harass me 24/7, while I was at home, and follow me anywhere, everywhere, and the techniques that they use for gang stalking was
these are
typical.
People in your neighborhood.
Yes.
And they all thought basically, or most of them, that they were doing the right thing. I wonder what kind of line they were given by the NSA before they were charged with taking this on and stalking and harassing you, violating your civil rights, your human rights.
Exactly.
And everything else. I mean, I wonder what they were told. This is a bad woman. We suspect her of being a spy for the Russian government or what. Who knows? Who knows?
The woman who's lived quietly in her home for 20-plus years. Okay,
right.
But I've wondered what in the world lies that you could tell people where they would eject any and all type of common sense and decency and think that committing criminal acts against one lone person in a group of hundreds was justifiable. Because I would say to anyone asking me to do such a thing, what happened to law and order? What happened to due process? What happened to the Constitution? You know, and at the
exactly.
same time, they're telling these people they have no right to speak about this because they're under national security letters, meaning they're under a gag order. Now, if somebody came to me and said, hey, I have something to tell you about Susie Smith here. I have no evidence. I have no witnesses. I just think it's so. And so I'm going to tell you, you can't tell anybody what I'm telling you, but this is a bad person. I need you to commit criminal acts against them for God and country.
Amazing.
That's not going to fly well with me, but apparently I'm a little bit of an anomaly, and I would have thought that I was entirely average, you know, because I wouldn't do such a thing.
Right.
But I will tell you, I got a hint of what they were doing. Now, I will say that they, you know, were trying to sabotage my polygraphs to get me fired, but I also thought that also serves to tell people, oh, this person didn't pass a polygraph. She or he has to be a spy.
Right.
So that's one basis.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing is that I actually saw an older police officer from the Howard County Police Department going door to door at the townhouses next door to my single-family house, and I wondered what he was doing, but I thought, well, now is my chance to ask him why they won't investigate the people I told them were stalking me illegally. So I went up, and I was walking toward him as he was speaking to a woman at a townhouse, and he turned and he pointed to my house, not seeing me coming, and he said, according to the NSA, the woman who lives in that house is crazy and dangerous, and the whole neighborhood needs, and then he turned and he saw me. And the woman's eyes bugged out of her head because she saw exactly where I'd come from. And he looked and saw me. And do you know this 40-something-year-old man sprinted to his squad car and peeled out?
He actually had a squad car. He was dressed in uniform, and he was doing this on company time, so to speak. This is really disgusting.
Yes, and he identified himself as Officer Williams.
Uh-huh.
And he said that he was the best friend of Daniel Coon, who was one of the top echelon police officers in Howard County. And Daniel Coon was also the man who told me, when I asked him why he wasn't investigating the license tags and the images of people who had been stalking and harassing me, he said, because the National Security Agency forbid me to.
Wow. Well, at least you got that much out of him.
Uh-huh.
You ever go talk to your neighbor, that woman?
Oh, I tried to, and she slammed the door in my face.
Ah, people are strange. People are strange. I guess the uniform and the badge and the demeanor, she flipped out. Just amazing.
Yeah.
Guilty until proven innocent, and no chance to be proven innocent, so you're just guilty.
Right.
A dangerous, crazy woman next door in the single-family house. Great.
Who had never done anything in the world odd, much less dangerous, in the 20 years she lived there.
Right, right.
Now, there was one man that I saw walking almost on patrol. He was an older man, maybe 50s, 60s. And I decided to go up to him and try to speak to him and just break out a conversation. And I pretended that...
He's a cop we're talking about?
No, he turned out to be an ex-Marine.
Okay.
Okay. His name was Fred, and we were talking, and he was very resistant to me speaking to him at all, but I pretended like I didn't notice his demeanor, and I said, oh, well, you know, I've got this Manx cat, and he's missing, and you know that means no tail. I see you walking here a lot, so if you see him, let me know. And so I just started breaking him down and talking to him, and after two or three episodes where I was speaking to him, just a casual conversation, I brought up the fact that he walked there so often. He had just started it, and I talked about his Marine service and about strange things going on in the neighborhood, and he got a little ruffled, and he said, well, if my country tells me that there's a danger to the neighborhood, then I will come out and walk and protect the neighborhood. And I said, really, who's the danger? And he wouldn't say anything. So I said, okay. I said, well, tell you what. And I started telling my story. And after, you know, two, three talks with him further, he just looked at me, rolled his eyes. He wouldn't say anything, but he said to me, he said, you know what, if I were you, I'd sue the bastards. And he would never say anything more.
Right.
But he realized he'd been played for a fool.
Yep, yeah, well, they all had, all of them.
Oh, yes, yes. Well,
isn't it amazing, Karen, just an aside here, how people can be played and turned on an entirely innocent victim to the extent that God knows what they might do to facilitate your unhappiness. Who knows? They want you out of that neighborhood. I'm sure word traveled very fast. This is really sickening.
Yes. You know, I had people who were obviously disdainful to serve me or sell me something.
Yeah.
People who would, when they saw me, just spit and then look hatefully at me. I've even talked to a gentleman who was so slandered that he actually had people spitting on him. So I'm amazed at what they can tell people that would turn them on another human being. But
I asked earlier. I wonder what they said. I wonder what the technique is, how to get people that turned. By the way, spitting on someone is assault and battery at the very least, if not attempted murder.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, this gentleman who I spoke to was in Florida, and he said that a lot of the time the police are spitting on him.
Well, they should be charged, but we know what happens. Anyway, go ahead.
Right.
This is
right.
Really sickening.
But anyway, I from about March to July, I made a point to get out and talk to people who were being hateful to me, but I got out and talked to them and pretended not to notice their attitudes toward me.
When you say get out, Karen, excuse me, when you say go out and talk to them, would you go out your front door, up on the sidewalk? Was this in the markets, the stores? What do you mean? Where'd you talk to them?
Well, anyone I discern to be one of these people, and it could be out on the sidewalk, it could be that I'm shopping and somebody's trying to intimidate me by following 3 feet behind me everywhere I go, and I would ignore that fact and then just start talking to them, and if possible, I started to tell them my story. I even went from door to door, you know, at a certain point and said, hey, you know, there's strange things going on in the neighborhood. And then I started to say, I wonder what's going on and could it have something to do with? And then I started to talk to them and tell them my story. One time I went to a nearby street and told the woman of the house the story. She rolled her eyes and said, oh, God. And then she said, I want you to come over across the street with me. And she took me across the street, rang the doorbell, and two people came out, and she said, you've got to hear this.
Mm-hmm.
And I told them my story, and each of the people got visibly upset, but they wouldn't say anything.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, other than that's awful, but they got a lot more upset than if they were just listening to some stranger tell us, you know, a story.
The point we need to make also is that these are quote, average American citizens. They're not working for the NSA at this point. These are your neighbors, and they're actually easily programmed to follow you, physically harass and intimidate you. This is really not good, not a good sign.
No, I mean, I think it was Mark Twain said that you can more easily fool people than you can convince them that they've been fooled.
That's exactly right, and he was right, a brilliant man. Okay, carry on.
Okay. So the word started to get out to these people. And if I noticed somebody was parked outside a store waiting for me, or, you know, just had blown their horn and noise harassment, because they would follow you. Two people would follow you wherever you went, and one of them would park on one side of you, one would park on another, a few cars away, and each would blow their horn as if answering the other as a means to say, we're following you, we're here. So that happened every single time I went to a store or anywhere. So it was very obvious noise harassment. But getting back to going out and telling people, that started to get through the group. And now what NSA does, or these group stalkers do, they'll have meetings where you can see they're having meetings. Like one of the neighbors down the street would have three cars come to his home every 15 to 20 minutes for about 8 hours a day. And they would get their little marching orders and leave in tandem.
This is now a huge operation.
It is. It is. And it's your tax money going in the toilet to create brown shirt fascists as neighbors. But and weekly, they would have a rah-rah get the bad guy meeting at a community house called Phelps Luck. It was a Phelps Luck community house. And so they would have 100 people parked there, and it's not even meant for that many people.
Unbelievable.
Every Saturday they would get people together and do whatever, you know, psychological mind control that they were doing. And the people would come out, and I ended up going down there and sitting. You know, and they come out and get really upset, and then try to pretend, you know, that they were doing one thing when they were doing another, as if they were just old friends meeting.
I sat
down there with the car, and when people would come for the meeting, they'd see me and do U-turns and speed away.
Well, I really salute you. It took a lot of courage to do that, and good for you. These people had to be, I don't want to use the term trained, but they had to be given guidelines on what to do. Now, this is all,
yes,
as you just said, tax money. Do we know how much per day the average gang stalker citizen of your neighborhood was getting paid to involve themselves in this illegal, outrageous behavior? How much were they getting paid?
Well,
do we know?
You know, I can't tell you, because their level of involvement required different types of payment.
Now, hey, different pay grades. Okay.
Well, if you had a house where you were hosting meetings on a regular basis, then you would get new flooring, new carpets, maybe some repair work on the house, painting. The people who are just stalking you on foot or walking around the house might get a gift certificate or things like that under the table.
So they were just buying people off. Everybody's got a price, right? Very few people will say no to money. Even more disgusting. Hold on a minute, Karen. We have to pause.
Sure.
I don't know how much this goes on, but I'm afraid it goes on an awful lot in this country, probably to the tune of tens and maybe hundreds of millions of dollars. Altogether, we don't know. It's one of those black holes. It's a black op is what it is, out in public.
Yes.
Stand by a minute. We'll come right back with Karen Stewart as we continue. Okay, and welcome back. The idea that someone can show up at your door with NSA ID or CIA ID, FBI ID, and intimidate you to the extent that you're going to listen to what they say and without any question whatsoever, and for a few bucks, or maybe a lot of bucks, you'll actually go to war against an innocent member of your neighborhood or a family, a husband or wife. It doesn't matter. What you're hearing now is not uncommon. It is despicable, and it's your tax dollars at work Go ahead, Karen. Let's go on.
Okay. Well, I was going to say that we already went through the fact that they had weekly meetings to keep people excited to, you know, like...
Incredible. Yeah. What idiots. I'm sorry. This is just idiocy, these people.
It is. I will say that part of the technique when they basically invade a neighborhood with it in mind to destroy someone is that they will go to various houses and say, we need for you to keep one or two of our people in your home so that we can direct this operation. And so when you discern who is housing these people, you notice that they have messengers that they are sending from one house to another because they don't dare use phones or email or computer because they do not want to leave any type of evidence that they're doing this. Another thing that they do is that they will use something the military uses, which is signals in the night. To have people start or stop a certain phase of the operation that's only known to them, unless you figure out, oh, they're not doing this or that anymore. But they will have bizarre things like electronic bird noises that don't sound in the least normal. They will have recordings of cannon fire. They will have recordings of saws that you bend back and forth to have that type of strange reverberation.
Yeah. You got to be kidding me. This is like children. This is stupid.
Well, I recorded some of it, so I knew that they were doing that. And like I said, the bird noises were bizarre because they were electronic and not natural.
I mean, this is so dumb. And what? Let me take a little sidestep. What was the ultimate goal at this point? What were they trying to do? Get you to kill yourself? Move out of the neighborhood?
They had put me on admin leave, and they were trying their best to gin up a reason to fire me. Now, according to the federal No Fear Act, making an IG complaint or an EEO complaint is not to be retaliated against. Well, they can't retaliate against overtly. So what the military, the DOD, and all kinds of different agencies have gone to is the classic psychiatric reprisal, where all of a sudden the person in their 40s or 50s has developed paranoia with delusions, which if you actually talk to a mental health expert, nobody suddenly develops overnight paranoia and delusions because that is a disease that will manifest itself in puberty and it will not just appear late in life. It's totally impossible. So what they're trying to do is they're trying to make what you report to the police make you sound like you're paranoid delusional, and then they have justification for telling you, I'm sorry, but mentally ill people can't have clearances, and if you are mentally ill, you can't have a clearance, and then you can't work here, so you're fired. Not, gee, you went to the IG, you were in danger of throwing a light on our dirty little sexual escapade for promotions ring. And, you know, they can't say that that's what they're going to do. So they were trying to, since they couldn't do this to me at work anymore, they had to go out in the neighborhood and say, oh, look at this. She thought it was NSA. Now she thinks it's everybody. So that's what they're trying to do when they get all kinds of demographics and ages, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, I even noticed that they were busing people into the neighborhood to walk up and down past the house because I would follow them. I will tell you one night, it was pretty much early in the morning. I probably went out at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, and a lot of the people who would lurk in the neighborhood were dressed in big baggy hoodies. So I said, okay, let's get a big baggy hoodie. And so I put that on and snuck out the back of the house in the dark, and I was walking around trying to see what was going on. I was figuring out which houses were doing what and which houses were complicit, and by seeing who was coming and going at that time in the morning. And there was one man who came out of a side street, and I was walking one direction, and he was about to turn and go the other direction, and it was about 5 o'clock in the morning, 5 o'clock in the morning, and I said, and he's coming from one of the houses that I suspect. So I, in my hoodie in the dark, waved to him, and he pulled over. And not only did he pull over to a total stranger, he couldn't see their face. It was total dark. Not only did he pull over, but he rolled down the window. which you don't do. That makes no sense at all.
Oh, he thought you were a player. Yeah.
Yes. That's yes, funny. Unless you think it's one of your people. So I went up to his car, and then I motioned my right hand toward the back of his car at a diagonal, and I threw the hoodie back so he could see my face. And he was horrified. And you could see it on his face. He was horrified. Oh, God, you know. And so I'm telling him, oh, and, you know, I'm part of Neighborhood Watch, and there's something strange going over there. And he actually looked where I was pointing with my right hand, and I took a camera from my left and took his picture.
Oh, great move. Great move.
So, he's an executive. He was probably about 60 years old. And he was horrified, and I got his picture, then I got a picture of the license plate of the car, and I said, have a nice day, and I started to walk away.
I'm sorry, well, this is so horrible, I shouldn't laugh, but that's hilarious. Good for you. Wow.
But he sat there, probably, I walked across the street and down the street a little bit and sat there and watched to see how long he would stay. But he had pulled over, brought out his BlackBerry, which is what it looked like, and he was texting like crazy. He must have stayed there 15 minutes texting like crazy. And I said, good.
They're spending tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of dollars ultimately on this. And for what? To cover up the fact that they've got this dirty little sex for promotion thing going on in the NSA, like every agency in the government has, or worse.
Well, you know, I thought about that for a long time, and everybody I told, everybody knew me, they said, Karen, this doesn't make any sense, because what they could do is they could go to you and pretend that they had an IG investigation and say, you know what, there's been an honest mistake made here, but we're not going to take this woman's promotion away from her, but we are going to give you the one that we think that maybe you do deserve. And that would have made me fat and happy, right? And I wouldn't have known about all
easy,
this other stuff.
Easy, easy. Yeah, we wouldn't be doing this program right now.
No, no. But what it turned out to be later, I started to piece it together, and somebody from the exact same office where this had happened told me, she said, Karen, Rita wasn't just sleeping with the head of Weapons in Space. She had slept her way through the management of Weapons in Space. And I said, are you kidding me? She said, no. She said, I can't even tell you how many of the managers in Weapons in Space are compromised. And I thought about that word. I said, compromise means they can be blackmailed.
Yep.
And if NSA security was going to such hysteric and rabid lengths to shut me up and destroy me, then they were protecting her. And
yes.
Who was running her? Who
yes.
was running her?
Yeah, yeah, that was the question I had. Who was running her? Mm-hmm. Sure.
NSA Security was. NSA Security has no right to know any of what's going on in any of the directorates. All they need to do is figure out, is somebody a spy, is somebody a crook, and protect the NSA employees from spies, maybe foreign spies that may hone in on somebody who's dumb enough to leave their badge on and go into a grocery store, but they have no right to any of the top.
Why were they running this woman with the free and easy sexual favors? What was the point? Were they trying to? Was there a faction within the NSA that was trying to accrue power?
I think so. I think they were running her and other loose women to blackmail certain managers at NSA so that they could get secrets from them and maybe sell them to other people.
Wow. Wow.
So if you want to compromise an agency like the National Security Agency, what do? You infiltrate security. You infiltrate Inspector General.
Yeah, gotcha. Perfect. Yeah. It all turns about around one of the most base of all human experiences, sex. Isn't that weird? Doesn't matter how intellectual or scientific it is, it all revolves ultimately to the lowest common denominator. And that's used all the time. Now, I'm not talking about pedophilia, which is the worst of the worst, satanic pedophilia, SRA and all of that. But this is just run-of-the-mill screwing people for reasons, not for any other thing than to gain advantage, to gain some kind of control over them. They are compromised. There's just no other way to look at it. That, And apparently, men are stupid. I mean, they're just, that's dumb to do that. If you're in a position of authority, influence, that you've got your career wrapped up in, why do it? They're not dumb enough that they can't figure out that there's danger in this and it may be being contrived, are they?
Well, you know, there's some kind of false sense of security in that, oh, I can do this behind closed doors and nobody will know because, hey, this is the NSA.
Oh, and you're going to tell me that most every room in the damn building doesn't have a hidden camera or microphone?
Well, it was pretty stupid because we would go to conference rooms, and there was one time we actually were in a divided conference room trying to have an actual meeting when we discerned that the other part of the divided conference room was being utilized for something that was not a meeting, and we became so embarrassed that what we were hearing, we actually left.
Unbelievable. Oh, my.
Well, they've always had that type of problem there because the men figure they'll get away with it because the wives can't come in and talk to their friends or they won't find out about it. So that's always been a problem there.
And a young woman who is of reasonable appearance can do pretty well in there, can she?
I would say so because some of the women were just truly only reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
But
wow.
They were willing, which was more important.
Got it. Wow. Wow. Okay. Onward. What a story.
All right. Well, I did get this gentleman's picture and was very happy with myself for doing so and causing a ripple through them.
Well done. Yes.
A few days later, my husband and I went to a local bookstore, and I happened to be walking around and walked through the cafe, and lo and behold, he was sitting there with a couple of younger, let's say a daughter and a son-in-law or something like that, and he turned, saw me, and jumped up and ran out the back of the store. I had done nothing but glance at him and
a brave citizen soldier.
Mm-hmm. How brave. And brave NSA. I knew he had to have been an executive.
Yeah. But, in the NSA. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. So that kind of
they pay people to coordinate this stuff, ladies and gentlemen. Your tax dollars. These are big operations. And all they're doing is trying to crush the life out of somebody who didn't play by the rules, didn't play by the expected rules anyway. This is amazing, Karen.
Right.
Just amazing.
Well, you know, the good news is that on, I think it was July 11th, and I believe that was a Friday, I went past the meeting house, and instead of a full parking lot and the street being filled with the usual people, you know, parking
yes.
on the street,
yeah.
there had to have been three times the number of cars.
How long after the picture-taking episode was this meeting? Was there any relation to the picture you got and this meeting? The
no,
size
I do
of it?
Think it took. I do think it took like 3 or 4 weeks at that point.
Uh huh. Okay.
So it wasn't immediately, but it was part of things falling apart. So when I went down to the meeting house and saw maybe 300 cars,
oh,
all
this
up
is
and
unbelievable.
Down the side streets and on the lot on the grass. And, you know, blocking everything. In fact, I went to a neighbor and I said, do you know what's going on at the meeting house? He said, dear God, he said, I've never seen so many people here in my life. And I said, how long have you lived here? He said, several years. I said, so is the meeting house more crowded than it ever has been? And he said, oh, yes. He said, for the past several months, I don't even know where all these people have come from. But he said, I especially have no idea what's going on here today. He said, I can't even get out of my driveway. So obviously something, it was like they had every single person come to the meeting where they only had so many each Saturday, or each Friday actually. And so the very next day, I got up and I almost felt like something spiritually had lifted. And I got out, went outside, and nobody beeped at me. I got in my car, drove somewhere, and nobody beeped at me but one lone person. And I said, he didn't get a response. There's usually a team. And so I went in and did what I needed to do at a pet store.
He missed
and came
the meeting.
Back out. Well, you stole my line. Sitting there with the usual baseball cap and sunglasses that these people had decided on as a visual cue that we're the ones who are stalking and harassing you, you know.
Right.
And he was sitting there next to my car pretending to read a book. And so I put my stuff away and went over to him, and he tried to hide in the car. And so he put the book over his face, leaned over as if I wouldn't see him. And I knocked on his car door, and he popped up like, "Oh, yes, indeed. May I help you?" And I said, "I just wanted to tell you that apparently you missed the meeting last night." He said, "What meeting?" I said, "At the Phelps Luck Meeting House." I said, "Since you missed the meeting, I'll let you know the stalking harassment has been called off. You can go home now."
Oh, too funny.
So he looked just as confused as can be, and trying to smile, like trying to pretend. But it was over. On July 12th, it totally stopped. And I think that it's because, I think it has to do with the fact that I saw Howard County police cars coming to the meeting house 2 to 3 Saturdays before that.
Uh-huh.
Because apparently they were having some kind of fisticuffs or some kind of public disturbance at the meetings after I started telling people my real story.
Dissension in the ranks.
I think so. So at that point in time, I started looking for a lawyer to sue NSA. And, gosh, I had to have gone through 20 different law firms and lawyers in the DCV, Virginia, and Maryland area.
Uh-huh.
And each one said, "No, we won't do it. We won't touch it with a 10-foot pole."
Right.
One that was a labor law firm basically got back to me and said, "I'm sorry, we can't take the case. The general counsel actually called us up and forbid us to take the case."
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I said, "Really? So I don't have any constitutional rights with the police, and I don't have any constitutional rights to hire a lawyer. That's very interesting." So I started getting on. I actually got a Woo Mail account. I don't know if you ever heard of them, but in the 2009 time period, they advertised that they were extremely secure. In fact, if you had a Woo Mail account and somebody else did, that they, you could talk totally securely because you were on the same server and nobody could break in.
Right.
Well, I started trying to find lawyers using that because I knew I was hacked. And they took Woo Mail down. He got forced out of business.
That was what happened to it, huh?
Uh-huh.
That's
so, yeah. But I did finally, I was down to two federal labor law firms. One was in Texas and one was in Georgia.
Uh-huh.
And I spoke to the gentleman who owned the one in Georgia, and I told him the whole story. And he said, "We'll take the case. We think we can win it." And I said, "Do you have any concerns that I might be crazy like they say?" And he said, he kind of paused and he laughed. He said, "I have spoken to crazy people." He said, "And I will not take their cases." He said, "But you're not crazy." And he just kind of laughed. He said, "You are not crazy."
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, "Well, thank you for that." And so they took the case, and it was an EEO case. We had to have, we basically filed a lawsuit based on an EEO complaint. NSA had 90 days to investigate, and they forgot. According to federal law, once an EEO, Equal Employment Opportunity, complaint has been filed, the agency has 90 days to investigate.
And they forgot.
They forgot.
Mm-hmm.
With my lawyers reminding them, saying, "You've got 30 more days, you've got 15 more days, how's it going?"
Yeah.
Because this is the only recourse for an intelligence worker at NSA. You cannot sue them using any other means. You have to couch a lawsuit as an EEO complaint.
Uh-huh.
So they basically refused to investigate. And then when the EEOC judge got on them and said, "Look, this is just not acceptable. More than 90 days has passed, and it's your duty to investigate." And so they said, okay, we'll investigate. So what they did was that they changed my complaint to read that I thought I was discriminated against because I'm white.
Who changed that? Who did that?
NSA. The EEO NSA.
I see.
And my lawyers were all over that. They said, you have totally changed the basis of her complaint without, you know, without any reason.
They did mass counsel. They didn't do anything. Sure.
No. They basically investigated based on the fact that I was white. And did you discriminate against her because she's white? And, of course, everybody said no. And they got back to the EEOC and said, we investigated. We did nothing wrong. And the judge at the EEOC said, no, this is not acceptable. I'm taking the case into the EEOC because you basically have botched it.
Wow.
And so they did accept the case. It's unfortunately, it's been sitting there since January 2010.
It's still there.
And it's still sitting there. Now, they made the excuse that... Yes, they made the excuse that it just has to, they just have to get around to it.
And
my thought is that NSA is exerting pressure on them to stall.
Oh, sure.
And I think it's to stall so that maybe they can kill me. I'm not sure at this point. I thought they were just making it stall to just be nasty, but at this point I'm wondering if they're counting on being able to kill me before the lawsuit's ever heard.
Well, thankfully, you're doing this program that will help you to some degree.
I do hope so. I hope they are not so blatant as to say, you know, that they can do anything they want at any time.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised if that mentality wasn't, if not predominant, certainly common. Not good. Not good.
Right, exactly.
All right. Stand by, Karen. We have another break here. Come right back, another hour to go as we work our way through the story. We'll take as long as we need to. This is Signs of Our Times. Karen Stewart is our special guest, and we'll be right back.